And welcome everyone to another episode of All Things Trek. I'm Oren.
Hey everybody, I'm Grace.
Welcome back. I am David.
You know, if you guys are going to deviate from
Thank
the standard
you. It's good
reading,
to be back.
You really got to run it past me, Grace. I know you're back, and that's a reason to celebrate. But if we're going to change the opening bit, that's procedure. You know, you have to go through the standard, you know, the chain of command, as it were.
We're playing it fast and loose, man. We're making it like ad libby, so it's like cool and fun.
See, this is, you guys are like Captain Kirk, and I am the, you know, the overbearing and onerous, like, you know, Starfleet official from TOS. Do you notice that? That's like always how they were whenever anyone from the Federation showed up.
That's just to show off how cool Kirk is. Everyone has to be a stick in the mud by comparison. We are the Kirks here, Oren. Be the stick in the mud.
Well, right now I'm picturing Oren just from the collarbone up on a little display screen that has like the logo, and then he's going to hit say, you know, do what I say, and then hit turn off the monitor, because you never really see those admirals. They're just on screen.
Don't you be a loose cannon there, Grace or David. You know, you got to uphold the Federation bureaucracy. All right, moving on.
Of our name introductions?
Yes, that is, it's everything hinges on that, Grace. But welcome back. You last week you were what, at a Ren Faire, I believe?
That's right. I was tending bar at a Ren Faire.
And I've never actually done this, but now that I have a Starfleet uniform, I do really want to go to a Ren Faire and just walk around with the tricorder and like talk about computer and program, because I think that's kind of trolling the Ren Faire people, but it does also sound like fun.
Oh, there were a few of those there. It was pretty excellent. Told them to watch out for infiltration from Cardassian forces.
Excellent. So, I have two things that I want to talk about before we get to our main topic today, which is a good one that Grace provided us with. But first is, guys, I have a theory about why, you know how in Enterprise they run into the Borg, which is like really dumb and makes no sense, because if that happened, then how come the Federation doesn't know about the Borg in the Next Generation?
Right.
Well, my theory is that in the TOS episode, Lights of Zatar, which Jera just reviewed over on her blog like a week or so ago, Memory Alpha gets destroyed. And Memory Alpha is apparently the complete repository of all Federation knowledge that they didn't back up for some reason. So it gets destroyed. So that would explain why the knowledge of the Borg was lost and the knowledge of the Ferengi and all of these other weird continuity issues that happened between TOS and Enterprise and then the rest of the series.
It's a little convoluted, but I'll take it.
I mean, it's certainly not what anyone was intending, but it would be, it is something I just noticed. I was like, huh, you know, because in that episode they never really go into what would losing that information actually mean for the Federation, right? They just kind of like, you know, step past it and are like, yeah, we lost all the information, I mean, whatever, moving on.
Well, that's too bad. I guess we'll just have to find new information and forget about the old ones.
Hopefully we'll install some shields on our next giant library planet. Now, the next piece of information is a pretty cool thing that happened. There's a Star Trek author by the name of David Mack, and he's apparently a cool dude.
Woo!
Because he has a book in which, among other things, this is not the only thing that happens, but among other things, it features a romantic relationship between, I think, a Cardassian woman and a Klingon woman. It might have been a Vulcan woman and a Klingon woman. Yeah, I think that was
Vulcan.
It. Right. And it was like, you know, okay. And it was no big thing, like, in the episode. There was much more tension over the fact that they were different species than the fact that they were the same gender. But some homophobe wrote him and was like, you can't have two ladies in a relationship. It don't work that way. And, you know, David Mack wrote an excellent
response.
The
aliens part was totally cool, though, right?
Right. Not that, yeah, the aliens, that's fine. Multi-species romance, you know, whatever. You get right on that. But anyway, and so David Mack wrote an excellent rebuttal explaining about why Star Trek is about, you know, diversity, and how he doesn't understand why a Star Trek fan who is reading Star Trek books would be upset by that, and that maybe they should go find a different fandom. So anyway, I thought that was really cool.
Ooh, burn.
So I don't read Star Trek novels, but this has made me think that maybe I should, because apparently David Mack is just a cool guy.
Yeah, I agree. Dave? I definitely recommend. And in the 80s, and somewhat in the 90s, but to me, especially in the 80s, there were a lot of like not so great novels. They just had, you know, I guess anybody could write them, and there was just, it wasn't good. lately there is a certain handful of authors that are just really, really awesome at it, and David Mack is definitely one of them. Dayton Ward is awesome. Kevin Dillmore, Keith R.A. DeCandid. There's just a group that you know they're going to write good Trek. They love it. And I think this was referring to Star Trek Vanguard. David Mack's written the Destiny trilogy, but I think this is referring to Vanguard. And he wanted, just a quick side thing, he wanted to do a special show on his site about the music of Star Trek Vanguard. And you're like, what? That's a novel. How's there music? But what he did was he listened to music during the writing process. Some of them were soundtracks from other movies. Some were like, you know, Garbage, the band, other, you know, art, contemporary artists.
Ooh, hell yes.
And so he wanted to talk about that and then play the song. And some of them, you know, talk about how it influenced the character or a battle or whatever, but he couldn't do that legally or, you know, cause he licensing for the music. He came to Trek Radio and we helped him do it. And so if you look up on our site, or you can even just Google music of Star Trek Vanguard, it's like a 2-hour show of him talking about how the music influenced him. And that is definitely a big thing about the love scenes between those two characters and just, you know, overall. And so some of it he talks over, like a narration of a battle sequence. Others he just talks before it and then plays the music. But it was very cool. I definitely recommend David Mack and all of his work.
Solid.
All right, so with those two things out of the way, Grace, you had the idea for today's topic, so why don't you tell the listeners what we're doing?
I did have the idea for today. Today we are having a celebration of guest stars and the guest characters they play. Ooh, ah.
Special.
Because let's face it, Star Trek is a show that has a lot of just people and characters that come and go willy-nilly, and some of them are definitely worth taking the time to appreciate. So what we're going to do is take some turns here and talk about characters either that we really like or thought were really well done, and talk about what made them work and what didn't make them work. And we've actually got a few standards for what we're using. Our standards for what makes for a good guest character or guest star. Oren, I gave you those. Do you want to read them?
You should, because I had to close Skype.
All right, one second here. So what we have for our standards of what makes a good guest character are, number one, is the character interesting? Number two, is the character well-performed? And three, did they really add anything to the episode? Like, could their role have been in the story have been done by a character that already existed, or did they really bring something new to the table? Those are our three bases that we're looking at. So, Oren, would you actually have a really long list of characters that you wanted to talk about. I just told you what I wanted to do, and you ran with it. So good for you, man.
Well, we might not get to all of these, but I just wanted to have, you know, I feel it's better to over-prepare than to not have enough to talk about. And we also decided to set, just because we, you know, to limit the pool a little bit, we were limiting this specifically to one-off appearances. And we'd already had an episode a while back about characters or like actors who played more than one role. So like Jeffrey Combs,
the Combs
is off limits.
The Combs episode. Yeah.
Right. Jeffrey Combs
always
is off
with
limits.
The Combs.
And like, you know, there are some honorable mentions.
This time.
That, you know, that go to like, obviously Ricardo Montalban as Khan and Commander Tomalak. And I wanted to talk about Erica Hernandez, but she was also in more than one episode. So my favorite, and this is a two-parter technically, but starting off is I really, really liked Elizabeth Dennehy as Commander Shelby, who you may remember from the episodes Best of Both Worlds, Part 1 and 2.
Oh, yeah. How could we forget?
And I liked her a lot because, first of all, she comes and gives Riker a good kick in his complacency, which is nice. And it's one of the few episodes of TNG that I feel we get real character development for Riker, because like Jonathan Frakes is a decent actor and a better director, I think. But the character of Riker, more often than not, is kind of in the background to Picard. And the episodes where we do get development from him are, you know, a little hit or miss. But in Best of Both Worlds, he gets great development because he actually has to step up and fill Picard's shoes, which is something that is, you know, obviously hard to do because we're talking Picard here. But Shelby is part of that. And Shelby is kind of, you know, she really mixes up like what's going on with the TNG crew, because that was one of the dangers of TNG, was that the crew could get a little complacent because they were, you know, they all had their well-established niches, or niches, I should say, that they fit into. So it's good to introduce a character like Shelby, and Ro did the same thing, where they would introduce her and just kind of stir the pot a little bit.
So she definitely meets the criteria of adding something extra to the episode that an established character wouldn't have been able to do.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, she couldn't, like, you couldn't have had this you couldn't have had this happen with any of the established TNG characters. And she was also just, I mean, the acting is good, and I appreciate how forceful she is, and how, like, you know, just, like, she has ideas. She's responsible for the whole rotate the frequencies thing that they do, which is something that they do against the Borg for basically the rest of the series. And Shelby was the one who came up with that idea. So,
that,
you know.
That's also incorporated into the Star Trek Online game. When you fight the Borg, you
yes,
shoot them a
is.
Few times, and then it'll show, like, adapted over their head, like a little text pops out, and then you have to click an item that, like, rotates and does a little thing, and you're rotating your frequency, and then you get, like, three more, four more shots before you have to do it again.
And Jara also just pointed out from the chat room, another question we should be asking is, could this character be replaced by a lamp? Which is, she was talking about the sexy lamp principle, which I don't think applies to any of the characters on my list.
Thankfully, I don't think it applies to at least the characters either of us have.
I love lamp.
Are you just looking at things and saying you love them, David?
I love phone. No, I'm not doing that. I disagree.
Ah,
of course.
Catchphrase. I mean, honestly, my biggest disappointment with Shelby is that I think it would have been cool if she'd stuck around. You know, like, with the way Ro did, because Ro was cool and stayed around for a few episodes, and I think Shelby would have done well for that, especially since, frankly, the Enterprise needed a tactical officer, because it was really weird to have Worf be the security officer and the tactical officer. It just didn't quite make sense, and they could have
That's true, but wouldn't have just being contrary have kind of become her niche, though, if that was the purpose she served the first time around?
I'd like to hope not. I mean, I'd like to think that they could have integrated her into the crew. I mean, frankly, I think, you know, there's that whole directive from Roddenberry where they were like, the TNG, there's no conflict among the TNG characters. And sometimes, like, that worked, but other times it really translated into this is a very complacent group of characters. And with,
yeah.
You know, with something to add a little spark, I think would have been good. And not that, I mean, I love TNG, especially the later seasons. And, you know, I like a lot of the characters, but I think that Shelby added something that would have been, you know, better if she could have stuck around. If for no other reason than because that would have also added to the balance, you know, the male-female balance, because TNG had great characters, but really, I mean, Troy is not good at best, and, like, Crusher is okay, but she certainly isn't going to be winning a lot of medals for best character of show.
Probably not, no.
So I just think it would have been cool to have Shelby stick around, and like I admired the way she and Riker were able to have a conflict that didn't make one of them look like an idiot, which is something
that's
sometimes
true.
Hard
there
to
were,
do.
Neither of them had to serve as a straw man for the other one's arguments to seem good.
Yeah, I would agree. So that's my first character. David, do you have a character a first guest star that you really liked?
Well, I wasn't sure if it was about one-time character, but the actor played multiple one-time characters or not. So I have a couple that probably could fit into that, or maybe not. But I'm going to give a shout out to a character who, in a way, appeared one time. If you're talking about the real version of them, but it basically Susan Gibney. I've always enjoyed her work, and she played Dr. Leah Brahms. And the
Ooh,
first time.
Yes.
The first time she appears, she's a hologram, so it's technically not her. So Leah Brahms really only appeared in one episode, if you look at it from a certain point of view. But I just liked her character, especially when the real one came to the ship for, you know, what would be the second appearance of Susan Gibney, the first of the real Leah Brahms, because she wasn't like a damsel in distress. She wasn't just there, you know, to be the yes man type, you know. So she had her own, like, thoughts, her own will. And she didn't just, you know, play into the males would have her be at that point. And it was cool because she was a scientist and an engineer, but not Starfleet. And that was something that I've always wanted to see more of, is the Federation researchers, Federation scientists that aren't in Starfleet. And she was a good example of that. And having a good back and forth between her and Geordi, and, you know, it didn't always play out so well for him. But I just enjoyed her character.
Also, we got to see her do two different takes on the same character, pretty much, when we get to see her acting as the hologram version of her and the real version of her. I thought that was really impressive.
Yeah, the actress certainly did a very good job. There are some kind of problematic, themes going on in that episode where, like, I don't know, I'd have to watch it again to really have a but like, the whole idea of Geordi kind of having this hollow fantasy of another person is a little bit, unsettling. I don't know exactly how.
Yeah, definitely.
But it was interesting that they decided to follow that up and not just leave it as, Geordi having this created basically this perfect person for him to experience on the holodeck. And they were like, well, real people aren't really like that, and so here's the real version. So that was interesting. I don't know if I liked the results exactly, but I appreciated that they were willing to follow it up.
If only Barclay got a catharsis like that.
And then,
Well,
oh, go ahead.
no, you go ahead, David.
Well, I was just gonna say, I mean, and aside from Leah Brahms, I just remembered that Susan Gibney appeared again as a different character, as Erica Benteen. She was on DS9 episodes Homefront and Paradise Lost. So there's the times where they go to. She was on the. She was given the command of the Lakota, but it was basically when we see Starfleet Academy and she's there. And so it was just another cool character for her to play, and she was in that case she was in full Starfleet, and so we get to see the same actress doing, multiple different takes of different characters.
Is that the same actress? I had not put those two together. That's
Yep.
interesting.
Huh, wow.
So Grace, why don't you give us one of yours?
Well, my first pick, believe it or not, is from a Voyager episode, which I thought would blow your mind at least, Oren.
I've got a couple on here from a Voyager episode, but if you like, you can think of my mind being blown.
Oh, I'm just
Voyager.
happy you're thinking of that. My first pick is Jule Grey's performance in the episode Resistance. And for those of you that don't remember, is the episode where Janeway gets stranded down on a planet with this old man who thinks that she's his dot, that she is his long-lost daughter. And I think we just kind of see a really amazing performance from Jule Grey. We really get to see his full range of potential as a character actor. We could see him being really, really empathetic. There are points where it's just kind of sad to watch how much he's caring and how much he wants to take care of Janeway. And we even get to see him do some of his sort of slapstick vaudeville stuff that got him an Oscar nomination for the movie Cabaret, and we get to see it in this context, and that just adds to the character and makes the whole thing so much sadder and well done. And I just thought it was amazing. It blew me away.
I do like vaudeville.
Well, who doesn't? And we get to see it's doing sad clown vaudeville kind of stuff, so that's always neat.
Yeah, I remember not really liking that episode very much, but I haven't watched it for a very long time, so I'd have to look at it again. I do think that the actor and character's performance that you're talking about are very good. I think maybe there were other elements of the episode that didn't quite hold up, but I'd have to watch it again to be sure.
Honestly, I think that without his performance, it probably would have been an episode that I could have just kind of given or taken, because it's kind of a wacky concept. Just you end up on a planet, and this guy thinks you're their long-lost child. It's very much a stock kind of story that we're used to seeing in this sort of in Star Trek, on TV, just in general, but I felt like his performance made it very interesting and very heartfelt and very hard to watch.
Fair enough. Well, since you have one from Voyager, I'll see your Voyager and raise you a John Savage as Bill Ransom
Oh,
in
really?
Equinox. Yes. So Equinox is an episode that has a lot of potential and a lot of problems, mainly because the episode refuses to go as far as it should go, because it's like the episode is basically showing us what Voyager should have been from the beginning, which is them having all these problems and their ship kind of falling apart because they have no support and they're out in the middle of this super dangerous quadrant. But instead, it was this pristine ship of them having to fight like space hooligans, with the Kazon. So we get to, so right off the bat, that tickles me, is that we get to see basically a what Voyager could have been in the hands of better writers with the with the Equinox. But the problem with the episode really is that it doesn't is that it. It Janeway kind of acts, she gets completely obsessed with with the Equinox, but it never really goes into why. Like, if they had played this up as Janeway feeling guilty about what she did in Scorpion, because that's basically the same situation, is that Janeway, in Scorpion, Janeway compromised the Federation's principles and caused death on a mass scale to help her ship, but they never really addressed that, and if they had, it would have been great. But my complaints with the episode aside, I really love John Savage as Bill Ransom, the captain of the Equinox. I think that he does a great job as sort of being the Starfleet captain who fell from grace and made these little excuses at first and was like, it's just one, you know, the alien's already dead. We can harvest it for fuel. It'll be great. And then it's like, well, I mean, maybe if we just kill one, that'll be okay. There's probably lots of them. And, you know, it just goes on and on from there until finally it's like, yeah, we could lobotomize 7 of 9 to get the information we need. I mean, it's just one more step. And it just, I think it's very interesting. I think it shows how when you commit one moral act, one immoral act, it becomes easier to commit the next one, etc., which is a great idea. And I think John Savage played it up very, very well.
Agreed, yeah.
All right, so David, you have another one for us?
Yeah, and this is a great actor who only appeared one time, and this would be Harris Yulin, who just is a great actor in his, you know, long career. But in this case, he played in the episode Duet. He was...
Oh, yeah. Oh, wow, yeah.
He first starts off being known as the Butcher of Galatep, Goldar Heel. And then later we find out that he is really not Goldar Heel. He is Aemon Maritz. And that's the episode where we find out that he's portraying himself. I think he might have even been altered surgically, but he is saying, I am Goldar Heel. I am basically like a big war criminal that, you know, is so hated by the Bajorans for his harsh treatment. And he's basically wanting to bring himself to justice. But we find out that it's really Aemon Maritz who was like basically cowering through the whole thing. And he didn't like what was going on in the occupation. He felt like he should have done something at that time, but didn't. And so now he's portraying himself as Goldar Heel to try to, you know, get justice for that. But then Kira and the crew see through that you're not really him. Why are you trying to do that? And then at the end of the episode, a Bajoran it got out, you know, Goldar Heel, the Butcher of Galatep, he's on the station. Somebody, a Bajoran kills him at the end of the episode. And Kira's like, it's not him. He was an innocent man. And the guy says, well, he's Cardassian. That's enough. And we see Kira saying, no, it's not. So it's just like a big, big transitional arc throughout the whole episode. And it shows that, you know, that there are war criminals out there and what should be done with them. Also, you know, the effect that would have on the people that are oppressed by them and, you know, done war crimes against them, how would they feel about it after the fact? And it was just a very, very good episode in general, just well written. But Harris Yulin brings so much to it, and he's acting multiple layers in, you know, different characters, you know, when he's portraying the one, then they realize it's really him, and he's acting through the Cardassian makeup, which, you know, takes up a lot of your face, or just there's a lot to, you know, deal with. So it was just great, great acting on his part.
And he and the Na Visitor have great sort of chemistry together. Their interactions are really fun and cool to watch. And this episode is also a really great sort of step forward in the character arc that we get through for Kira throughout Deep Space Nine, and just her acceptance of the past being the past and what's been done is done, and that there are people who aren't as guilty as she would like to think they are.
Well, yeah, and I mean, Duet, it's hard to say enough good things about Duet. Like, as an episode, Duet is amazing. And in particular, the plan that Maritza has, because Maritza was a Cardassian who was against the occupation but didn't have the power to do anything about it, and, you know, is racked with guilt, and he has this idea of, you know, what if Bajor got to put a Cardassian war criminal on trial? And it's interesting because we think of, you know, war crimes trials as being what happened after World War II, but in most cases, it's actually very rare for people to actually stand trial for war crimes. Like,
oh yeah,
you know, just recently, it was this huge deal that in Cambodia, they managed to finally put on trial and convict two members of the Khmer Rouge who are responsible for some of the worst war crimes that have ever been committed. And it was like, you know, and it took like 30 years, and there are only two of them. And those are the, like the only two who have ever been prosecuted for those crimes, because it's very difficult because those people, a lot of them are still powerful. Like a lot of the people who are in power in Cambodia right now were part of the Khmer Rouge. And so they don't really want anyone looking too much into that. And it's that same story in a lot of different places. And it's very important. You know, it gives a very important sense of closure and, of course, of justice to an oppressed people if they can have, you know, if there's some sense of those people who, you know, who did this to us. It's, you know, the rest of the world, or in this case, the rest of, you know, the quadrant or what have you, recognizes what was done to us as wrong. So you can imagine how Bajor feels that these Cardassians committed all these crimes and then just left and are now sitting pretty on Cardassia being given war medals. So it is a deep episode, like, and it gives, you know, and this character of Amon Maritza gives Nana Visitor a chance to act in a way that she hasn't gotten before. And like Gray said, it's a really important part of her character. So yeah, David, I can't agree more that is, you know, that he might be my favorite guest star pick ever, because he's just so good. And that the speeches that he gives to Kira, both in the beginning when we think he's still a war criminal and later when we find out what he really is, I can't say enough good things about him.
And Grace, you were right. I looked at the Memory Alpha page. It says the plot of the episode comes from Robert Shaw's 1967 play, The Man in the Glass Booth, which tells of a Jewish man accused of being a Nazi war criminal. And of course, that is based on World War II and the Nuremberg trials. And then it also says the intent of the episode was to establish Cardassian occupation of Bajor as a metaphor for British, American, Japanese, German imperialism, circa World War II. So there's a lot to this episode.
Yeah, I mean, it's
it's heady stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Kathy would call it a floating signifier, which is that it's a metaphor for more than one thing. And it's just amazing.
But it's not like stuffy and intellectual all that. I mean, it's so visceral and emotional.
No, it's very accessible.
Very good.
Now, on a somewhat lighter note, I feel like we, you know, a lot of my picks are also for very heavy episodes, but just something that was really fun to watch was. And one of my favorites is Stephen Hawking as Stephen Hawking in the episode
yeah,
The Descent.
Absolutely.
Because I love that, because like Stephen Hawking is, you know, you could say that he is the most brilliant mind of our times, and it would not be a difficult statement to make. And he's also a big Star Trek fan, and of course he's dealt with severe disability all of his life. So seeing him, you know, in an episode of Star Trek as himself schooling Albert Einstein in a game of poker is just so much fun to watch.
And he looks like he's having such an amazing time being there. You can just see how psyched up he is on his face. And you're just so happy for him, and it's just such a fun little evil bit in the episode. It's just great to watch all around.
It also made sense for something Data would do, right? It wasn't like they had to stretch to figure out a way to include him. It was a very seamless way
Absolutely,
to put Stephen
yeah.
Hawking in an episode of Star Trek.
I think that's one of my favorite of all of the different holodeck scenes. Like, any time the holodeck is used, sometimes it's just briefly like this, other times it's a whole episode. But you could say holodeck appearances, this is basically one of my most favorite. And I thought it made sense. I mean, anybody could have done it. Janeway had her adventures, Captain Proton, So yeah, seeing Data talking to like the great minds of science was just awesome.
So Grace, why don't you give us one of yours now?
Well, another one that I think is definitely worth mentioning that I think you actually brought up before was Helene Udi in The Rules of Acquisition as L, the undercover female Ferengi who actually has the lobes for business better than most of the guys around her do.
Was she Pell? Wasn't that her name?
Yeah, Pell.
You talk about a character they should have brought back, right? I mean, because they kept
going
with it.
Definitely, yeah.
They kept going with that theme of, like, you know, of the Ferengi women fighting for equality. And, like, Ishka's cool. I like Ishka's character. But, man, having Pell there could have made, like, it would have been more interesting to see that this is not just one person, right? Like, the fight for equality of Ferengi women is bigger than just Ishka. Like, there are more, Ferengi women out there who want their freedom. So I agree. I think she did a great. I think that the actress did a great job, and it's always a challenge to act through the Ferengi makeup. But she managed it.
Especially because we get that whole thing of for the like the first part of the episode, we're not supposed to know that it's a female Ferengi, so we get that sort of oh-ho-ho reveal, and the actress does very well both doing presenting as the female and the male Ferengi, and we also get to see some really fun interactions between Pell and Quark. It's just a cool little episode, and it's a neat character, and this is kind of, I think, the epitome of what makes for a cool one-off character. One where they show up, you find out what they're about pretty fast, and you're rooting for them. You want to see more of the character, but then, they get to go off and have adventures of their own, and you feel okay about that. 'Cause she gets to start doing like all of the trading and commerce in a whole new quadrant, and you're like, "Wow, way to go." Am I
I wonder if
right?
there's a novel about her, because really, like, she went off into the Delta
There should
Quadrant. That
be.
place is dangerous.
Yeah.
The episode also has a great exchange between her and Dax, where Dax says, "You're in love with Quark," before realizing that Pell is female, and she doesn't think that, and Dax doesn't seem to think that's weird or unusual, which is also
Yeah,
nice. Just.
we get the adorable moment of, "So you're in love with Quark. He doesn't even know I'm a woman. Wait, you're a woman?" And it's adorable, and it's a cute little telling moment about Dax that Dax really could care less about that kind of thing, and Dax.
Well, it's just something we could use more of in general, right? Because that's one of Star
Yeah.
Trek's, problems, is that as good as it is on some issues, it's like it kind of pretends gay people don't exist most of the time, which is
Yeah.
unfortunate. And so when they do address it, it's like, yes, more please, more of that. So David, do you have another one for us that won't break our hearts, like the last one?
Yeah, this is another fun one, and it's brief, and it may not be like, the biggest part of the episode. Well, in a way, he is the biggest part of the episode, but not the. I'll just say that James Worthy, legend of the Los Angeles Lakers, he appeared as a Klingon, Kor-El, in the Star Trek episode Gambit Part 2. And so Gambit is a great episode, a two-parter on its own right. But he was one of my favorite Klingons, and I think he said maybe four things, three or four words in the whole episode. But he was the giant, tall Klingon who was, they brought him on board, and they're trying to scan his shuttle. And he is a very stoic, and a lot of people have the idea of Klingons being these like, big, loud, troll, barbarian, space orcs or whatever. And so, which is just in wrong to begin with. But then here comes James Worthy being very, serene, stoic, however you want to put it. Like, he's not aggressive and angry, raging. He's just very quiet. But it was cool to see it at Worf, who is, tall in his own right, having to look up to another tall Klingon. So James Worthy,
Nice.
one of my favorite Klingons.
Yeah, that was a fun little bit because they were like, they're like asking him all these questions. He's just kind of staring at them. He's like, "Man, I wish you would like get mad or something. You're freaking me out."
And
Good stuff.
I have heard that he spoke so little because they didn't want to pay him extra, because the more he would talk, so he is basically almost a glorified extra. But he did, his longest line was, "What is this?" when they're trying to scan his shuttle, but the rest of the time he's just saying no. But very cool. It was fun.
Just deny everything. Policy of full denial. All right. Well, all right. So my next pick is a two for one, because these two I think really have to come as a pair. Because with even though they don't ever appear on screen together, without one, I think the other one doesn't work. And they are Carrie Kane as Alexan as not excuse me as Alexa Davos, and Richard Cox as Carol Flynn, not Errol Flynn, mind you, but Carol Flynn in the episode The High Ground. Which is a fantastic episode overall, and I honestly don't think they'd be able to make it today, because I've talked about it before, but it's basically, it goes into the reasons and the process of terrorism. Like, it's an episode about terrorism, and it treats it, with a introspective look, and it looks at both sides to see what's going on, like, why are these people doing what they're doing, and what is the horrific effect that it has. And nowadays, I feel like if you tried to do something, a movie like that with that kind of even look, and you tried to release it in like a primetime television slot, you would get lots of complaints of people being like, "You're saying terrorists are the good guys," or what have you. I don't know what accent that was I was just trying to do, but let's pretend that
I
never
was
happened.
angry, ax angry, the accent.
Yes. So that episode, and of course, the Devo's character is the head of security for the government faction, and then Finn, did I say Flynn earlier? I meant Finn. Finn is the head of, you know, of the resistance, who are basically terrorists because they teleport in and blow stuff up. And you see both of them, and you see, like, the Devo's character is part of an authoritarian, you know, regime, and she's, like, trying to be a moderating influence, but to a certain extent, it just, you know, it's bigger than her. Like, she's, even though she's the head of security, there's so much momentum behind what she is, what, you know, what, behind her, that she can only influence policy so much. And she's also been, you know, she's been, to a certain extent, she's been radicalized by all of her contact with these terrorists, to the point where now she sees everyone that's part of that ethnic group, the Ensada, I think it is, as being a potential enemy, even though that wasn't what she thought when she came in. And then you have Finn, who, of course, is, you know, very charismatic, but also incredibly dangerous. Like, he's, you know, he doesn't see killing as even a problem. He's just like, sure, I'll kill a lot of people. Why not? So anyway, I love those two, and I love the different sides that they portray.
Excellent. And I will now follow up your two-for-one with a two-for-one of my own, if that's quite all right.
Well, it's your topic. You do what you want.
All right. My pick was, this was also one of the performances that actually made me want to do this category. Anne Haney and John Anderson as the old elderly couple in The Survivors. Do you guys remember that episode?
Yeah, it's the one where they go to a Federation colony and find that it's been wiped out except for two people. And that was where they introduced literally the one-off race of the Hoosnack, because...
Is this the Uxbridges?
Yes, because as we find out, the man is actually basically a Q. They don't actually say he's a Q, but that's the most logical explanation. He's a being of supreme power who is just living as a human, and because he has a bad sense of timing. Instead of using his power to save the colony, he used his power to wipe out the Hoosnack race after they destroyed the colony. But you're right, Grace. They did a very good job as guest actors.
I think it's actually Anne Haney whose performance makes the episode kind of for me as, you know, sweet but headstrong old woman who, you know, is there standing by her husband and they just want to protect their home. And then you realize that, you know, things aren't quite right there, but you still feel sympathetic to this stubborn little couple. And I think it's really the sort of the strength, but at the same time, the... I want to say the kind of grandmotherliness to her portrayal that gives it that strength that you really want to see things be okay for the two of them. And the fact that John Anderson's character is stoic and she's the one who's very, you know, in and around and being like, oh, but you have to stay for tea and everything. They make for a really good balance and they work together very well in this episode. And their performance is what makes it, again... The whole, oh, there's only two survivors on this uninhabited planet thing could be kind of schlocky in concept, but the performances and the story, I'm saying mostly their performances here, really just carry the whole thing along and make it really intense to watch.
Yeah, I mean, I agree, because without that, the rest of the episode is a little bit, like, it doesn't quite hold up very well, because it's kind of obvious what's going on. Like, as you watch because what's going on in the rest of the episode is that the Enterprise just keeps getting attacked by this ship, that this alien ship that, like, you know, every time it comes back, it's magically more powerful, and it's always trying to drive them away from the planet. Like, it never tries to destroy them. So it's pretty clear what's happening if you have any, you know, genre savviness at all. But the actual, like, the couple, like, the, you know, these two older, you know, these two old people, basically, they actually make the episode for you. And I think you're right. I think the you said the actress's name a couple of times now, but I still can't remember it. But the older woman, I think her sort of grandmotherly nature also does a good job selling it.
She has a very good balance of, you know, affectionate and stern, which I think is just kind of in Anne Haney's performance as an actress. If you've seen her in any of her other stuff, I know she was on at least another Deep Space Nine episode, but she keeps what could otherwise be, you know, the old sweet doddering old lady, and makes her, you know, very interesting and very strong. And you believe that she'd kind of old lady who would move into the wilderness with her husband to, you know, keep their marriage alive.
Yeah, good house, good team.
Yeah.
Worf does have some funny lines in that episode. I admire Gaul. Speaking of Worf, David, you have another one for us?
Yeah, and it actually ties into obviously Klingons and you know, duh, hello, and then Worf. And so this actor, he has portrayed multiple characters. Each one was only a one time. In a TNG episode Masterpiece Society, he was Martin Benbeck. And in the Voyager episode Juggernaut, he was Fezzik. Wait, is that Andre the Giant Fezzik? No, it was but in this case, Ron Canada portraying Chapok in the DS9 episode Rules of Engagement, the Klingon advocate who challenges Worf. That was basically my favorite of his characters. We've talked about Rules of Engagement before in the legal episode, but I always enjoy his work, and I think he made a very good Klingon in general, but then that character specifically and how he acted against Worf and against Sisko, it was just a great episode, and so I definitely give a shout-out to Ron Canada for Chapok.
And that's a pretty good episode in general. For anyone who doesn't remember, Rules of Engagement is the one where Worf is put on trial for, they call it an extradition hearing, but it's basically a trial for shooting down a Klingon civilian transport in the midst of a heated battle. And, you know, then the way they resolve it is by figuring out that he didn't actually do it because there was no, it was all a ruse. There were no actual Klingons on the ship. It was all like just designed to make Starfleet look bad. But of course, in that episode, we also saw that the Klingon advocate is a much better lawyer than Sisko. Like, I thought it was funny that Sisko is defending Worf and the Klingon sent a professional lawyer. And I was like, man, maybe Starfleet should have sent a professional lawyer. But no, I guess Sisko can do it. He can do anything.
He can pontificate like one, so why not?
A brief side note for Ron Canada. It says that Canada was the leading candidate for the role of Martok, but then lost the role to his good friend J.G. Hertzler.
Ooh. Aside from having an awesome name like Ron Canada.
Man, Martok would have been so much more sinister if he'd been played by that guy.
Right?
Or at least I think he would. Maybe I'm not giving him enough credit. He might be able to have a much wider range than I think, but when I think of Ron Canada as a Klingon, it's just like so, like, you know, he's going to get you. Whereas I think of Martok as being much more, you know, I don't know if I would say not gentle exactly, but much more like laid back for a Klingon.
Yeah, now, I could see that.
Now, yeah. I feel I would be remiss if I did not mention one of my favorite characters of Star Trek is Trisha O'Neill as Captain Rachel Garrett from the episode Yesterday's Enterprise. And I know we've talked about this episode a lot because it's very, very good. But not to spend too much time on her, but she is she is the only non-male to have captained a ship called Enterprise in the Star Trek universe, as far as we know. It's possible that there may be others that I'm forgetting from some of the books, but I know in the actual on-screen appearances, and, you know, she was a badass, and I liked, you know, the way that she, you know, she has this conflict of having to weigh her crew's lives versus the greater good of potentially averting this war with the Klingons. She has a very good back and forth with Picard, and, you know, and even her death serves the plot very well, because when she dies, there's a lack of leadership on board the Enterprise C, and that, you know, forces Tasha to step up, which is a great moment for Tasha's character, because, of course, she didn't get enough development either. So, I mean, overall, you know, Trisha O'Neill, Captain Rachel Garrett, I would love to see more of that if they ever want to make a show about her.
Well, I definitely agree. She's awesome in that role, but she also has another Klingon connection. She played a Klingon in the Next Generation episode, Suspicions, and she was the Klingon warp field specialist Kurok. And
she was cool
in that episode. That's the one where the Ferengi scientist says he has some new tech and then flying a shuttle into a star, and a lot of people don't believe him, but Crusher is supporting, so she's like playing diplomat and brings a bunch of other scientists on board the Enterprise to check it out. Kurok, the Klingon scientist, is one of them, and the Ferengi dies, or no, Ferengi does it, then somebody else somehow some other alien is in the shuttle, and he dies, and they're like, who killed this thing? And of course, they look at the Klingon as like killing her, but she's, you know, not the most pivotal in that episode, but she's definitely a cool character, one of my favorite female Klingons, and in that one episode, the one appearance, and also the fact that she is a Klingon who is a scientist and a warp field specialist, you know, not just another hit you over the head warrior type of character. But then that character Kurok gets another new life in the novels, specifically in the TNG novel Diplomatic Implausibility. It's set forth that she was the main designer of the Negvar, the main, you know, the new Klingon battleship. And then later in the IKS Gorkon novel, she's made chief engineer of the Gorkon, and she has a relationship with Leskit, who was that Klingon who had the necklace made of Cardassian neck bones, and just a great character. So from that one episode, you know, that character is spun off in the novels and has a great, you know, rest of the story for her. And every time I was reading the novels, the Gorkon novels are a trilogy of novels, and she's in all of them. Great character in that. But every time I was reading it, I was thinking of Trisha O'Neill as that character from the TNG episode, like seeing her face as she says the lines.
And that episode, the episode that we're talking about in particular, what is it? Is it Investigations? It's the one where Crusher has to solve the murder of the Ferengi and, it's, you know...
Suspicions.
Oh, yeah,
Suspicions, right. So that one episode is also good for, because we get to see, first, we get to see a Klingon scientist, which we don't get to see very many of those, and we get to see a Ferengi scientist, and both of those characters are breaking the stereotypes that Star Trek has established for their species. So I think both of them are good, because, you know, it's nice to see, because it really bothers me when the Starfleet characters are racist against Ferengi when they're, you know, when Paris is like, man, that merchant was worse than a Ferengi wanting all of our money.
Racist.
Yeah, super racist. Not cool. And so I appreciate it when they show us that not all Ferengi are the same. And that, you know, and that you don't, they're not, like, if you put, that Ferengi are not just biologically disposed to being greedy. So, you know, I appreciate that. I thought that was cool. And I think we would be remiss if we did not mention that when Grace posted this topic over on the Facebook group, Jera, who's a good friend of the show, she posted a couple of her picks. So, and hers are...
I actually wanted to do one of her picks next, if that's all right.
Oh, well, please, go ahead.
I wanted to do Hallie Todd, who played Lol in The Offspring.
Oh, Lol.
Lol.
That episode, I cry every time, and I know it's going to happen, and I still watch the episode, and I still go with it, and I still cry, and I love that episode. And then it's bittersweet and great, cool, but weird, because a friend of the station, Adrian Grady, she cosplays as Lol, and she nails it. She's dead on. So I'm like, oh my God, that's such a great outfit. Your costume, that's so awesome. But then there's a part of my mind that is like, don't cry, don't cry, don't cry. So it's just, I love that episode and that character.
It's a good episode, and Haley Todd, I think, largely makes the episode, because Lol, the character, kind of has to go through Data's entire character arc in 45 minutes, you know, where she goes
essentially,
from...
Essentially, yeah.
Yeah, and Haley Todd makes it work, and it's, you know, the relationship between her and Data is very, very touching. The only problem I have with that episode is that the Admiral gets off so easily. Because he's like, oh, it's so sad, it wasn't meant to be. And it's like, man, you killed her by giving her a panic attack, asshole. Is there something we can charge you with in this case? Like, I feel like there should be. And they just kind
like
of, you know.
Negligent drama mongering or something.
You know, it's just like, it's basically like, it's not unheard of if you have like a human with like, you know, a weak heart or something, to have really serious health problems if they are put in a panicky situation. So I feel like it's not that different in with Lol. So I definitely agree. Haley Todd, great actress and great episode. Another one of Jarrah's picks was the Susie Plaxen as the female Q in the Q in the Gray, which, although I appreciate Susie Plaxen in all of her various roles, you know, as she was also Kalar and Dr. Solar, I believe, which are both good roles. And I think she would have been great if Q in the Gray.
She was also a Q, remember? Oh, right. That's what we're talking about. Sorry.
That is a little bit what I'm talking about. Sorry if I was being too roundabout. But I think she would have been great in this episode if the episode hadn't been so bad. Like, I don't want to get into it too much because we're not having a Q in the Gray bashing episode right now. But I hate that episode so much. And it's hard for me to look at anything in it as anything other than being part of the Q in the Gray. Blah. No good.
Well, times like that, I mean, some people hate Voyager, some people love it, some people hate Enterprise, some people love it. Each time, you know, we're going to have favorites, we're going to have some that are not so favorite, and there it could be the series, it could be the episode and the, you know, the arc of the episode, the concept of the episode. Times like that where I'm not in love with it, I piecemeal it apart and look at the character. Maybe the character has a good story or a good thing, but they're in a bad story. Sometimes the character may be flawed. So then I look at the portrayal, the performance, like the dance of it. And I think she does a great job in that character, but Susie's always awesome.
Oh, when bad stories happen to good characters. And good actors.
I think that's basically that's my complaint, is that I think it was a good actor, a good actress, and even a good character in a terrible story. Although you want to know what my ultimate favorite guest character is, who I think is the best. Hang on, let me get my show notes properly oriented here.
Okay. Do we need a drum roll?
So that would be William O. Campbell as the outrageous O'Connor. Because we all know how awesome he is. He's so outrageous. And we know he's awesome because the rest of the characters will not stop talking about how awesome he is.
He's got that ponytail and the outfit and, yeah.
Yeah, and he's so dignified, like when he beams over from his ship and he's like, you know, got his butt towards the camera. Such a great way to make a first impression. And you know that he's cool because, like, Troy talks about his libido. And God damn it, I hate the outrageous O'Connor so much.
Don't worry, everyone does.
I think this right here is like the example where Data gets the emotion and he's drinking something. And he's like, I hate this. And then they say more. And Guinan is like, and he's like, yeah, give me more. So we hate it, but we just can't stop enjoying it.
This is definitely a good example of the point of diminished returns, where you put too much effort into trying to make a character cool.
Well, I mean, you can't make a character cool by having all the other characters say that they're cool, right? Like, I mean, that's a basic like understanding of writing. If you take like any creative writing class, they'll tell you that. So I don't know what was going on with this episode exactly. I don't know if it's the actor's fault. I don't think I've ever seen him in anything else. So I don't know if it's a case of bad acting or bad direction or both. I do know that the writing is also terrible, so I'm sure that wasn't doing him any favors.
Oh, wait. Since you guys did the two-for-ones, can we add, with this character and the actor, can we also add Terry Hatcher as the transporter girl? Whatever, I don't know if she had a name in that episode.
She was like Ensign something. There's that, like, that episode is also great because there's that scene where they're like, we need to go get, outrageous O'Connor out of the quarters of this lady. And Worf's like walking down the corridor and it's playing the danger music. And it's like, what? What is the danger? I mean,
STDs,
is he gonna
that's the danger.
Is he going to walk in on the making out or something? I mean, I don't think that justifies the danger music.
She was Lieutenant B.J. B.G., sorry. Lieutenant B.G. Robinson.
The first answer better.
It was a mouth typo. Mental typo. Lieutenant
Freudian slip.
B.G. Robinson. There you go.
That was what we were afraid they'd walk in on.
And that was her one episode, too. So there's your two for one. The outrageous O'Connor and Terry Hatcher.
And I've got nothing against Terry Hatcher. I mean, does she even speak in that episode? Does she even have any speaking lines? I don't think so.
Two lines. I mean, she was flirting with the outrageous guy, so.
Well, that does demonstrate that she has poor tastes. But then again, everyone in that episode thinks he's, like, amazing. Like, basically, the only person there who doesn't love him is Worf, and that's only because Worf is, like, threatened by him, which I find to be ridiculous.
He admires Gaul and what, swashbuckly, you know, swagger? I don't know what you would call it.
Guy couldn't swash a buckle if you handed it to him on a silver platter. So we're coming up at the end of our hour, and I've still got like a whole list that has more that I could go on, but I want to make sure, Grace, you first. Are there any that you haven't gotten to mention yet that you would really like to talk about?
Actually, we've already gone over all of mine.
All right, David?
I did want to give another shout out to a great actor who's done a lot of great roles over the years, and also several great roles in Star Trek. In TNG, The Defector, he was Admiral Aladar Jarok. In Voyager, Jatrell, he was Mabor Jatrell. And then on Deep Space Nine, like one of my the two characters, those I remember those characters, but they weren't so like awesome to me, you know, overall. I mean, great acting, but the two characters that I really love from this one, and I guess this is like, you know, the runner-up, Silver. He was Mora Paul in the Deep Space Nine episodes, The Alternate and The Begotten. He was basically the Bajoran scientist who studied and developed and mentored and everything with Odo. Remember that Bajoran scientist?
Yeah, Dr. Mora.
Yeah, Dr. Mora. So that's basically my second favorite role for him. That was a one-time... Well, I guess that character was in two, but my main favorite role from this James Sloyan was a one-time character. In a way, in a weird perspective, he was... In the TNG episode, Firstborn, Kimtar, but then we later find out that he was actually Alexander Rozenku from the future. That was the episode where future Alexander, comes back in time to try to spur young Alexander on to become a warrior in order to save Worf in the future. And so I think he just did a great Klingon, a great actor in all of his roles, but when he was a Klingon, I liked how he had the Klingon, like, fire and, you know, bravado, but then there were times where he dialed it down and had, you know, the more sincere... it was just a great, you know, diversity of how he had approached playing a Klingon and just that whole episode in general about, you know, the concept of it. But I think he... there's times I think people, you know, whether they're a main guest star or just, you know, one of the crowd... Sometimes people put on the Klingon makeup and then they're just like, "Rawr, I'm a Klingon," and it doesn't really, you know, sit well to me.
Yes, like, the "Rawr, I'm a Klingon" school of acting.
Right, and so I always look at when there's a character that is a Klingon and they're given more, a little bit more than just an extra background role. I look at how do they approach it, what is their mentality, how do they portray it, and I think he portrayed a really good Klingon, a nuanced Klingon that he had the, you know, the aggressiveness and the fire, but then he also had the tenderness when he was talking with young Alexander and just, you know, the way he interacted with Worf and everything is just a great, great Klingon character role.
All right. So, and that probably is the only time that Alexander has ever been cool, like as a character, is when he was, you know, is when he was like an assassin from the future. So to close out this show, we had a request from Jera to talk about Sarah Silverman from the episode of Future's End of Voyager. So, you know, this is Jera's fault, you guys. This is what we're all talking about as far as Sarah Silverman goes. So,
oh man.
As a rule, I'm not a big fan of Sarah Silverman's comedy. Like her stand-up, I don't really like it. But I do admire Sarah Silverman for what she does outside of her comedy where she talks about, you know, how like she promotes women in comedy in general. And, you know, is an important, like, trailblazer in that regard. So I certainly respect her for that. In this episode, I feel like she was very kind of meh, honestly. Like, she doesn't get a whole lot to do. And I think the episode's writing just isn't great overall. But I didn't hate her. Like, you know, I thought she was decidedly okay. Yeah, sorry, Grace, did I cut you off there?
No, that was about it, pretty much. She was there, and it's just funny to watch. The whole thing only really stands up because you watch it again, and it's like, yeah, that's been on Voyager. That is definitely, that is happening, yes. Makes the whole thing so surreal.
Well, you know, that whole episode where they go back is, you know, it's Voyager doing that, but... she's not just like some party girl, she's not just some, you know... throwaway character. She's a scientist studying extraterrestrial stuff, and so, you know, that's just kind of funny in a way to have Sarah Silverman be a scientist with you know, the SETI Institute or the SETI program. But hey, you know, cool. She's a young hip scientist chick, I guess. I remember that episode. Her character was Rain Robinson, which I just thought, oh, interesting name, Rain. But
nice alliteration.
I didn't hate it. I mean, I didn't at the time I wasn't fully in love with Voyager, and my opinion has like gotten better about it over the time, over the years. But yeah, I didn't have a problem with it back then, and I still think like, oh yeah, good for her. She was on Trek and playing a scientist.
Yeah, I feel like maybe she would have been more memorable if they'd let Sarah Silverman write more of her own material. I don't actually know for a fact that that isn't what happened, but like, you know, just it felt like, you know, Sarah Silverman is a professional comedian. They could have given her, you know, more interesting lines to work with. That was at least, you know, at least that was my feeling.
Yeah, and I agree with Jera in the chat room. Jera says she reminds me of Catherine Hicks's position in Star Trek IV in the same relationship with Tom Paris and Tuvok compared to Kirk and Spock. So yeah, I could see that.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, that is actually very reminiscent. I hadn't thought of that. But all right, so thank you, Jera, for our ending topic, because I still have more, so we could do another episode on this, and maybe we could do an episode specifically on the one-off guest stars that we hate, with an honorable mention to the outrageous Okana, because everybody hates him.
Well, we could probably do it like a half and half, where start off with, you know, part two of the ones we like, and then finish off with the ones that we don't like, and then I'm confused or not certain where, I'm not sure which side Harry Mudd would fall on. Do we love him? Do we hate him? So we'll have to figure that out. We'll save that discussion
for another day.
Right.
All right. Well, thank you everyone for listening. We will be back next week talking about something. Not sure what yet, but we'll figure it out. Until then, this will be All Things Trek signing off.